I have with me Sunil Vemuri from Recall. I'd like to start by asking you if you could just introduce yourself and a little about your background.
Sure. Well, my life's work is about helping people remember better and using technology to help people remember better. And one of the most significant things that I did along that line, or two of the most significant things I did, was a two-year experiment where I recorded my life and built a search engine so I could literally search my past for anything I forgot.
That's amazing.
Since that experiment I did at MIT, I started the company based on the lessons that we learned from that. And that company is called Recall. And we have taken what was a research experiment and turned it into a product that everybody can use these days to help with their day-to-day memory problems.
Great. I'm going to ask you a bit more about Recall in a minute. But first of all, can you tell us about about your research project, how that worked and what sort of things you learned?
Sure. We started with this idea. And at that time, it was really fashionable to have this life blogging, record everything in your life. And let's see what we can do with it. See how if this thing can be useful. And the thing I was really interested in wasn't just recording my life so that I had this perfect history, but I really wanted to help people solve the day-to-day memory problems they were having. And so we really studied what are those kind of challenges, both at home, remembering to do things with your family, wife, kids, etc., or at work. The idea would be, if we have this detailed recording of your life, and the kind of recordings I made were audio recordings. I also captured your email, calendar, your location, weather, anything I could get my hands on, the news, anything that might later be a valuable trigger for something, and then built a search engine on top of it. Just like you search Google, anytime you forget something, you just type in a few keywords, and we built the software that would just give you the list of things, including audio recordings from the past, emails from the past, that might help you remember that thing that you've forgotten.
And what sort of things did you find that you were then able to do once you had that capability?
Okay, well, there's certain things you can do, and there's actually a big problem that we found out from all this, so I'll tell you about both. First of which, and one of those kind of memory problems that we were trying to tackle is what's called transience. This is when you forget facts, like a student in a test who is trying to remember, who wrote that particular book, or, just imagine a biology test, what was the name of that animal, or whatever it might be. So for those class of memory problems, we were finding that people were able to successfully and quickly search and find these results. One of the other things that we were using, and to contrast this from a traditional Google-like search engine, is you experienced these in the past, so your memory of the event can help you find something quickly. Well, the hypothesis was you could find something faster than if you didn't know about it at all. So yes, we found that to be true up to 1 year. Anything that happened in the past 1 year, your memory of it can help you actually speed up the process and help you quickly find it. After 1 year, it's just as if you didn't experience it at all.
Interesting.
So that was one of the results that we found, that there's kind of this one-year cliff where it actually, or your memory doesn't help the technology. Now, there was a downside, too. Your confident misremembrance of something, would just lead you astray and get you to say, oh, I remember when that conversation took place. It was in June, and it was when we were sitting by the window at the coffee house. No, in fact, it wasn't. It was in fact in September, and we weren't in a coffee house. We were actually somewhere else, and that would just lead people totally astray in their search.
I've heard that there's this research that actually, as you recall a memory, it's sort of rewritten in your brain when you restore it.
In terms of the cognitive process, this is actually one of the interesting things. When we did the experiment, some of the subjects couldn't believe they actually said or did some of the things that they did. There's a common phenomenon where we can only encode so much in our brains, and the gaps we fill in with plausible fiction. And that plausible fiction makes us feel comfortable, and it's all and that plausible fiction is also often biased towards us to be more heroic, in fact. And this is often the reason why we, you know, we think of past memories as more positive than they were. Take, for example, you know, a camping trip you might have been on. You often remember the positive things. Oh, it was great. We went rafting. We told great stories. But you forgot how dirty the bathroom was and all these other, you know, and how difficult it was to sleep and things like that.
So I guess there's an importance to being able to forget, and maybe that's something that we need to think about more as we digitize our memories.
Well, and I think that's also one of the downsides of capturing everything. There's this, what we've termed the baby in the bathwater problem. That it's very hard, if you record everything, to separate the two. And in fact, one of the lessons we learned from doing this experiment is it's a bad idea to record everything.
Right.
It is better to let people self-select and pick and choose the things they want to record. So in fact, you know, when we transformed from a research project to a company, we aimed at having it, usability became a much more important factor, because before it was just turn the recording device on and just go about your day. I mean, that's you know, really as easy as it gets. But in fact, what we learned is that's not going to help us at the retrieval side, because when you retrieve, you get so much garbage in with that, and it's really affecting the amount of and the quality of the search results. We want people to pick and choose.
I guess people need to be able to process information and make intelligent decisions, and it's easy to be overwhelmed if you haven't got the right information.
Yeah, and ideally what we want people to be able to do is to be able to say, well, I'm not sure if I want to keep this or not, but it's so easy to just capture and record it. I'm just going to throw it in there. Because even that decision of capturing is a cognitive load.
Yes.
And you want to avoid that cognitive load and make it just as easy as kind of, you know, okay, just dump it in there. I mean, GTD has this philosophy of, you know, capture before you forget and then organize later. So it's, you know, well within those lines. But we are not at the point where computers can discriminate at the time of recording potential future relevance.
Yeah.
So our brains are still the best one at that. And if we can make it just really, really easy. And some examples like that are, you know, you're talking to somebody and they say something really interesting. Like, oh, too late. And you say, can you say it again? And they don't say it quite the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
So in fact, you know, there are cameras in the market right now that let you capture, you know, the photo, you know, 5 seconds ago. Audio recorders that let you, you know, capture 30 seconds ago.
Yes.
Things like that where you don't have to make a big decision at that time as was this relevant or not. And these are the kind of usability things that we look at towards the assistance of the
capture. It seems to me that what's going to become more important is not so much what we capture, but more like how we tag it and how we index it and label it for future retrieval.
Yeah, and how we do it, making it very easy to do that, and also can the computer help us with that? Yeah. You know, ultimately, we are the arbiters. We are the ones who really need to decide what is important, how we want to tag those things. But if the computer can help us make those decisions quickly, then that would encourage the capturing of the relevant information as we're going about it.
So this seems like a good time to dig into Recall, if you start off by telling us what the product is and what it does.
Sure. So Recall is you know, our mission here is, you know, remember what's important to you here and now. And so we've taken this and tried to focus it on what are the most important things you need to remember at this current time, in this current situation. So what we have is the ability, first, how do we capture the important things? One, we have a set of ways where people can, you know, either type or speak into our system. We can import it from various places where other people store it, or, you know, it could be your Google Calendar, mm-hmm. Outlook Calendar, Evernote, various places where people store their data, and make it accessible to Recall. So then what Recall does is it looks at what are the things on your calendar, what are the things on your to-do list, etc., and combines that with your current location.
Right.
And tries to determine what are the best things to remind you about in this current place at this current time.
Right.
So, for example, you know, we're in this conversation right now. Recall will tell me the things that are relevant to this conversation. You know, this conversation is on my calendar. It's at a particular location. So all of these things combined come together in what we call a here and now presentation.
Yep.
And so this is what Recall is really about, making it very easy to capture, you know, by voice or by importing from where you already store things. Automatically organizes it for you. We do, you know, analyze and detect what it is that you said, looking for dates, times, names of people, names of places. This tagging step that you're talking about, this is the part of the, this is one of the things that Recall does, is it helps you automatically organize these things into your, you know, the various buckets and various tags that you have.
So can you actually perhaps give us an example of what I might use Recall for in everyday life and talk me through the process that I go through?
Sure. You know, I can give a couple examples. So let's take a work example, where in my work, on my commute to work, I may think of a couple ideas that I might want to talk to with my boss. So there, Recall can help by take your phone, and on iPhone or BlackBerry, for example, but you can use any phone, and just speak the things that are coming to your mind. You know, right. On your way to work. You know, say you're on the train and commuting to work. Just get the ideas out of your head. Then Recall will take responsibility for that. Later on in the day, I might have a meeting with my sales team, and that meeting I put in Google Calendar. Recall will have read my Google Calendar, found out that I have a meeting, and then pulls together all the notes that I have from all these various places and gives me a summary of the things that are important right there in preparation for it. So about a half an hour before the meeting, I glance at my iPhone. And I see it has produced a summary of the various notes and topics related to the meeting coming up. It uses the keywords from the meeting itself to search my entire archive of notes and figures out here are the most relevant things. Again, here and now. So that would be a workplace example of this.
Yes.
Now you can extend that to home as well, managing of the kids and the communication between husband and wife. We have the... One of the things we have is the ability, like even yesterday, my wife sent me a message asking me to remember to pick up the kids.
Right.
She had to change whose turn it was to pick up the kids. So she sent me a Recall message, and while I was in the middle of the day, I got a little alert.
Right.
And right before the time came, the system alerted me again saying, okay, it's time to go. So there are applications on both. In fact, when we look at how users are using the system, we see pretty much an even mix of people using it in the business context and in the home context as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. You touched earlier on the idea of GTD, the getting things done mm-hmm. philosophy. It's something I've experimented with as well. And obviously the first stage of that is capturing mm-hmm. everything. But I guess what we're seeing here is that it's no good just getting all that information into the system if you don't trust that system is going to remind you at the right times. So I guess the question is, what innovations have you been able to do with Recall in that space about how you actually know when it's the right time to remind people?
Correct. So, one of the things that GTD talks about is, put it into the system now and then organize it later. But that organization step is an important part of the GTD methodology, that whether it is at the end of the day or, very soon thereafter, you must take the step of organizing it. One of the things that where we feel we're complementary to GTD is that Recall can automatically organize these things. So that organization step that a GTD follower might want to have, a good part of it is already done. Now, the computer may have a different organizational scheme than them, so we allow people to adjust that as well. So in effect, it saves time in that form of the GTD methodology by taking on some of the organizational responsibilities. But now there's a second class of things that... very few people know what to do with. This is this, I have something to do, but I underspecify. I don't say when it needs to be done by. I don't say where it needs to be done by,
yeah.
etc. And a huge amount of the input that comes into systems, like GTD systems, to-do lists, calendars, are heavily underspecified.
It's that idea, isn't it, of processing the thought of saying, what is the action that I need to do here, and is it actually actionable?
Yeah, exactly. Or it's... I need to go get a whole bunch of sodas for the picnic this weekend, or I need to send a new sales report to my boss. Well, yes, I know I need to get this thing done, but we don't specify the time of that. It's almost implicit.
Yeah.
So another innovation we put on this is having the system be able to take those pieces, take those underspecified things, and put them on a schedule of reminder. So even though you didn't specify it at that time, Recall will still find opportunities to remind you about these things. And this is a schedule based on human cognition and how people forget, and how people forget in the face of information overload. The last thing you'd want to do is to send you a little, these little push reminders to you right when you're in the middle of a meeting.
Yeah.
So we look at things like, you know, where are the gaps in your schedule? And the more information Recall has about you, you know, if we have your calendar, we have your schedule, then we can find out when would be a good time where you have a few moments. You know, we all have a couple moments during the day when, you know, where, you know, it may not be a long time. It could be waiting for a train. It could be, you know, you're sitting down and about to watch your favorite TV program and there's just a couple minutes, or even in the commercial breaks where you say, well, you know what, let me just glance at this and see if there's anything that I'm forgetting right now. So we try to really capitalize on those times by having our information, especially the information where you've underspecified, flow into those gaps where you might want to then just take a moment and say, aha, yes, no, I've done that, or yes, I remember I need to do that.
And how do you identify those gaps at the moment?
Those gaps are based on your calendar.
Right.
So, you know, if we have your calendar information, we can identify the gaps.
Yeah.
Now, there are some other techniques that aren't as reliable, which is, you know, your use of the application.
Yeah.
So when you are using the application, you're presumably busy doing something, so that isn't a good time to interject some new information, unless it's relevant to the thing that you just contributed. So, but that's how we're doing. So we try to gracefully handle a situation where we have very little information about your calendar, but the more you put into it, the more value we can give to it.
Great. Okay. So it kind of seems like Recall is the beginnings of a trend towards a computer assistant, really, a sort of agent that does your bidding, like in the old days a secretary might have done that for you.
Yes, and in fact, many of our users are using it for just that purpose. And this is certainly one of the objectives we have, is that, you know, and especially if you think about an assistant, you know, what is one of the major responsibilities of an assistant? It is a memory aid. You know, helping you remember the key things you need to remember for the day, giving you a briefing of, you know, here are the meetings you have for today, here are the people, here are their names, here are some of the important points you want to cover. This is the genre of utility that we're seeing with Recall. Now, one of the interesting things that, you know, we predicted it would be more of a workplace thing because of the current trend right now towards, you know, downsizing companies and reducing staff and such, that people would be looking for the type of assistances that they normally had with humans but can't afford anymore. And so we found that there was one class of users, yes, who was using it for that, but the home situation was different, is that there's a whole bunch of people who wanted personal assistance for the day-to-day challenges they have with managing a home, managing a family, and managing their social life as well.
Yeah, especially now as we all live digital lives to some degree or other.
And you know, the other thing that we've been observing is that there seems to be this addiction to information overload.
Yeah.
People are following more people on Twitter and Facebook, and you know, we've often talked about the information overload problem. But there's also this information overload addiction. And how do we manage that addiction is having things that can help us sift through the morass of data and help us pick what is relevant here and now. And so that's, you know, that's also a trajectory that we're seeing as we see the intersection of memory, the memory challenges in social networks, and especially some of the social phenomena around things like, you know, teenagers and college students who are trying to keep track of a broad social agenda and making sure that they are aware of the various social activities that happen, that it is still a memory task in order to juggle all of these things.
Yeah.
And so
as far as the relevance goes, I can see that a big part of what you've been looking at with Recall is the context of now, what's most relevant now. But I guess another big part of it that you sort of touched on a bit is the us as individuals, what are we interested in?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you're looking at, including with Recall?
Yes. Our ability to produce relevant results is a critical aspect of the success of the product and success for the users as well. People who are coming to us are really looking for solutions that will help them find out what is most important find out what's important to them here and now. They know the technology is capable of it. They know that the sensors are there on their iPhones, on their BlackBerries, etc. And for them, it's just an issue of, well, can't you just connect the dots and just put this thing together? And we're now at the point where the mobile technology can do this. We weren't able to do this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
There weren't devices like, you know, the iPhone, the Android, and the BlackBerry that can join us. You know, something that can combine my calendar, my to-do list, connecting it up with a location sensor and a time sensor and, you know, all of this, audio recording, etc.
So what do you see as the major technical challenges ahead in this trend?
well, many, many technical challenges on this, you know, one of which is, you know, especially as we're looking at the data set that we have, and part of what we have in our data set is the ability to predict when you've forgotten something.
Right.
And that prediction is based on essentially mimicking what the brain does in terms of any time you experience something, that part of your brain is strengthened, that memory is strengthened. So we follow that as well. You know, anytime you use the data, you consume the data, we elevate its memory strength, its predicted memory strength. Well, this becomes this is a computationally difficult problem to handle, and you know, we've handled it, but that is one of the largest technical challenges we have, is taking something like this and making sure that that it scales as we start mixing this with the social network connection. Memory is not an isolated thing. Memories are jointly experienced. We are both experiencing this conversation, and when the audience listens to it, they also become co-participants in our conversation. So,
oh, interesting. So you think there'll be a sort of a shared memory store almost?
Well, yes, I do think. And each one of our collective remembrance of this conversation is something that is a useful thing for the individual who wants to remember that. It could be that, you know, if there's something, you know, pithy that one of us said, and I hope we did, that somebody later wants to repeat and some future conversation. Well, it would be nice if they had, you know, easy access to that particular memory of that. But we're all co-participants in that. Or it may be that, you know, two people who are part of your audience listen to a particular bit, and they're trying to reconstruct. Oh yeah, on you know Alex's podcast, there was this really cool conversation about the future of memory, but I'm forgetting that one little bit. But their collective experience can help each other do that. And there's actually a cognitive phenomena with that, which is the tip of the tongue phenomena. I know it. It's on the tip of my tongue. I just forgot.
I can't access it right there.
Well. You know, this becomes a particularly interesting problem on the technology side in order to navigate that. Now, there's a variety of technological problems that are related to security and privacy of this data as well.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
So this becomes a very interesting problem. And when we talk about the privacy, there's a variety of technological barriers that we can put up. The best analogy right now towards a cloud storage of your memory, if you will, is your email. There are companies like you know Google with Gmail, you know, encouraging people to store their entire history of their email on the net.
Yes.
And that effectively is a form of memory. Well, you know, I think, you know, there are technological protections that Google has, which indicates that society is currently comfortable with that. But those barriers are coming down. Even you know, just a few weeks ago, we saw that Google was having a little trouble with China about hackers trying to intercept people who are advocating human rights in China. Well, what happens if these are your personal memories? I mean, the email was personal communications, etc. So I think there's a technology conversation that needs to take place that all the companies like Recall, like Google, need to get together. And talk about what are the kind of protections that the good corporate citizens are going to offer to society. But there's also a separate conversation about how we as a society are going to move with technology. You know, back in the 1980s, there was a whole bunch of privacy reaction to caller ID coming out on the phone. Like, oh, I don't want to give out my ID to the person I'm calling.
Yeah.
But now it's the most commonplace thing, and it would be odd if somebody didn't provide their caller ID as part of a telephone call.
Yeah.
So, you know, how is that going to transform a society? And then the third part, which is the legal part. You know, how are the laws going to change? And there's some very interesting laws in the United States and in Europe which cover this, which start to cover this. They don't actually cover it sufficiently. And in fact, in Europe, the privacy protection is greater than it is in the United States. And in the United States, it's actually a smorgasbord as well, where each state in the United States has a slightly different version of privacy law.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the things that I think we need to get together and have a conversation about what are the protections we're going to want to have, because in a sense, this is inevitable. Even if you don't record your life and do the kind of recording you're doing, somebody else might. And that can be a benefit. I mean, there's, you know, if there's a student in a classroom who records the lecture, they might distribute it to everybody else. But then what are some of the, you know, what are some
of the...
So
it seems like there's going to be a lot more decision-making on our parts about what we do share. And maybe we won't always be able to know what possible future value something might have.
That's correct. And you might not actually know that you are sharing it at that moment.
Yes.
There might be a recording instrument somewhere in the room when you're having a conversation. Somewhere, you know, it could be a video camera up in the ceiling, or it could be, you know, your neighbor right next to you is, you know, recording a little bit of their conversation. You just never know at this point.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone could be recording, yeah. So I want to go back to this issue of ownership. So how do you think that problem's going to be resolved? Do you think we'll all end up with our own personal data cloud that we control, or...?
Ideally, that would be great. Ultimately, you know, there's one aspect of the ownership of the data and another aspect of the access of the data. So, ideally, we would retain the ownership of our data. Now, that gets muddled a little bit, especially if it's a shared conversation. So,
yeah.
If we're talking to each other now, well, who owns this?
Yes.
You know, and if I wanted to retract the recording of this thing, do I even have the ability to do that? I mean,
yeah, we already see that with photos, don't we? When you take a picture of someone, who has the rights? Is it the person who took the photo or the person who's in the photo?
Correct. So it's very, very blurry. And even if you recorded it and intended it only for yourself, then, you know, the line is a little less blurry, maybe, because the law suggests that you still don't have total ownership of that, that the courts can actually get access to that. Ideally, it would be the individuals who would retain as much ownership as possible, or if it was a shared environment, the people who are co-participating. But yes, we have very little legal and social precedent to understand what is the right way to do things. And in fact, if I were to go to, you know, five different coffee shops or bars, whatever you have you, I'd easily get five different opinions on what people would want in their lives for this.
So we're going to need to form new decision-making skills about our data and what happens to it.
Uh-huh. And also be very aware of the fact that that the data you're putting out there is, especially if you put it up into the cloud, can be consequences to that. Now, the pushback to that may be bringing it closer and closer and closer to your body, because the closer it is to your body, the more control you have on that. But also, as you become disconnected from putting your personal data on the cloud, then the ability for the system to do certain beneficial activities for you diminishes. I heard the one number that, you know, we keep our data on roughly 80 different locations, you know, digital data. And this could be, you know, on your computer, online, etc. Well, geez, if the average computer user is putting it in 80 different places, my gosh, you know, how do you, you know...
It's the digital equivalent of having papers scattered all around the house, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's this belief that, you know, having everything in one place is the ideal, and there's actually companies that strive to say, mm-hmm. hey, integrate with our solution, put everything in one place.
But then it's also a single point of failure, I guess.
It is single point of failure. The other part of that is human behavior is actually counter to that. You know, we say we want everything in one place, but when you actually watch people, they tend to go more towards this, I want things in 80 different places.
Yeah.
Because it's, part of it is specialized tools work better than the integrated package. And then there's this motion to try to integrate them, but then newer things come up, and then the divergence happens with that as well. So human behavior is our own behavior is counter to our own statements in that sense.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're running out of time. I'm going to wrap up with just a couple of simpler questions. Looking at your product Recall, have you got any particularly unusual or surprising uses that you've come across of people using it?
Oh, we got plenty of those. We have people using this for various religious activities and community service and church organizational activities. That was a surprise for us.
Tell me more about how that works.
I think it's under the genre of people who are just trying to organize a community service activity, communicating with people, saying, "Here's a whole bunch of things that everybody needs to remember to do," and it isn't a single a single or multiple people organizer communicating with everybody saying, okay, you need to bring these picnic supplies, etc. You know, make sure you bring this, etc. You know, all together. Another common use is self-help. This is another thing that surprised us a little bit, where people putting data into the system to help them to remind themselves about good behavior. This could be something like a diet, you know, don't eat that chocolate cake today or something like that. That, you know, it's that, you know, that daily memory jog, if you will, was an important part of their process. And, you know, before they, you know, stick post-it notes all over the place. But because they carried the technology, they said, well, no, I want that delivered to me as a daily, weekly, et cetera. Or it could just be something like, remember to call mom. Just, you know, the common behaviors or behaviors that we want to aspire towards, having technology help with those things. So there's a couple examples of some of the things that we've seen that that.
I guess like any new technology, people use it in ways you'd never envisaged.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, we have examples of students using it to help them study for exams and things like that, and that was, you know, that was a little surprising, because initially we thought it would be more towards the corporate side, and the corporate side certainly does, you know, does use it for helping them remember day-to-day activities, but there's a set of things outside of that that were kind of fun and interesting too.
So if somebody wants to get started with Recall, what would they do?
So very simple. If you can just go to the website, and it's www.recall.com, and you can sign up. It's we offer a free version of the product and a pay-for version of the product. Or if you have an iPhone or a BlackBerry, you can go to the App Store or the App World and just search for Recall, R-E-Q-A-L-L, and download it directly on your iPhone and BlackBerry, and then, you know, give it a try.
And then once you've got the app, what's the typical things would you do to get started?
So the first thing to do is, and I'll take the iPhone, for example, is to pick up the phone and just think of something that you really need to remember, whether it is, you know, you need to buy your wife a present or need to fix the tires on your car or, you know, buy a new camera, whatever it is, just go ahead and speak it into it, because since we take voice as our input. The second thing to do after that is, you know, we start every account with, you know, a home and work location. Well, tell us where your home and work is, and then just start assigning things to home and work. And then watch when you come home or when you go to work, how it adjusts the list to the list of things you need to do at home and the list of things you need to do at work. It senses your location and figures out what are the right things you need to do here and now.
Sounds like a great product and some fascinating discussion. So thank you very much indeed for talking to us today.
Thank you very much as well.
Thank you.